Today on Straight Talk Africa, South African President Jacob Zuma will lead Freedom Day celebrations on April 27th, commemorating the 20th anniversary of the end of apartheid. The nation is also gearing up for its national elections on May 7th. A discussion on South Africa's post-apartheid years and its political future is next on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, April 23rd. I'm Vincent McCorry, in for Shaka Sali, who is on assignment in Africa.
Well, hello, Vincent, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
I'm excited, Maria, to have you here today, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Maria Magello, your social media reporter.
Well, today we are commemorating the 20th anniversary of the end of apartheid as we examine the status of the country since the historic date of April 27, 1994, when people of all races were able to vote in the first democratic election that elected Nelson Mandela as South Africa's first black president.
A historic date indeed, Vincent. So stay tuned to the hour-long show where our guests will weigh in on the topic, but also our audience whose comments are coming in through our social media platforms. We'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
Well, but first, South Africa's de facto apartheid regime enforced strict racial segregation. The system has been dead for two decades, but it has left this nation and its people with deep scars, and yet they have moved to reconciliation. This week, as the nation prepares to commemorate 20 years of freedom and democracy, they, too, are preparing for another election, when again all of South Africans, black and white, will go to the polls. Straight Talk Africa's Paul Sisco has more.
South Africans remember with reverence Nelson Mandela's long walk to freedom after 27 years behind bars. Just over 4 years later, on April 27, 1994, the struggle for freedom and democracy was further realized when South Africans of all races voted for the first time in free democratic elections. Apartheid was over. Mandela continued the Freedom March as president of the nation in the African National Congress, now led by President Jacob Zuma.
Madiba and his peers and those before them laid the foundation for the society that respects human rights, freedom, and justice.
Zuma's leadership is now being challenged by a record number of candidates from more than 30 political parties. Hazel Zili leads the Democratic Alliance.
It's time the voters wake up. But unless the voters wake up, we will just have given away our freedoms and our democracy on a platter to a corrupt government.
Many consider Zuma's $23 million security upgrade to one of his three residences excessive. South Africa's government ombudsman released a report in March saying President Zuma violated the country's ethics code by failing to protect state resources.
My finding, therefore, is that the first complainant's allegation that the expenditure constitutes opulence at a grand scale is substantiated.
Another government report has cleared the president of any wrongdoing.
The ANC remains very clear that corruption must be fought wherever it occurs.
The ruling ANC has easily won every election since that first all-race poll in 1994. Most surveys indicate the ANC will hold on to power, but the vote will be closer than ever before. Great strides have been made in South Africa under the party of Nelson Mandela, but he is no longer with us. Today, one in four South Africans is unemployed. Half the registered voters are under 40, and many, born after that first free democratic election 20 years ago, are voting for the very first time. Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Well, thanks a lot, Paul, for that report. Now joining us here in Washington are two distinguished guests who are both born in South Africa. Buti Kali, Deputy Regional Representative of the Office of the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, or UNHCR, a UN agency mandated to lead and coordinate international action to protect refugees worldwide. Mr. Kali is based here in the nation's capital. Then we have Reverend Dr. Mankeloho Mlanko Kobo, Associate Pastor of Shiloh AME Church and founder of Life Restoration Ministry based in the U.S. city of Baltimore, Maryland. And you forgive me for butchering your name. Now, she also authored a book entitled Restore Me, 40 Healing Summons That Deliver a Message of Hope, Love, and Faith. Dr. Mlanko Kobo's book draws upon her own struggles from her humble beginnings in South Africa to her new life in America to bring insight and wisdom through her writing. Also with us today is Dr. Samadoda Fikeni, the chairman of the Council of Walter Sisulu University, who is joining us on the phone from Pretoria, South Africa. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
I'm delighted to have you. Now, later in the program, we will give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. And the country code, the U.S. country code, is 1. Now, first, I want to come to you, Dr. Fikeni, South Africa, if you can hear me. What is the one thing you would say has been the greatest achievement for South Africa since the end of apartheid? Do we have you, Dr. Fikeni? If you can hear
me. Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. Did you get my question?
No.
Okay, let me repeat that.
You can just repeat it for me.
Yes, it's been 20 years since the death of apartheid. What is the one thing today, as we commemorate 20 years, you would say all South Africa can rally around and celebrate?
Well, I do think that the infrastructure of democracy and the institutions, such as our new constitution, is one thing that even opposition parties, people from different racial groups, still respect and make as a point of reference. Mm-hmm. The symbols that we have acquired in terms of the new flag and many other symbols that we have as national symbols, those two seem to be a unifier generally. So that's where you'd say achievements in the main were scored. Of course, you also have massive social infrastructure spending, from housing to building clinics and schools, and up to the social security grant that is given to the destitute and the people from the disadvantaged background. Those are generally the kinds of things that I think many people understand and rally around.
Okay, thank you. If we bring it here to the studio, let me start with you, Dr. Reverend Mlanko Kobo. Trying to still get your name. All right, I'll get it by the end of the show.
Sure.
Now, he has mentioned very poignant things like the Constitution of South Africa, really commendable. The whole of the continent of Africa admires the continent, the Constitution of South Africa. But looking at the reality on the ground, many people get concerned about the implementation of the provisions of that constitution. As a person who has lived through apartheid and now for the last 20 years has been observing how the country is operating and striving to achieve those objectives, what is your assessment?
My assessment is that, yes, we have succeeded in the last 20 years. However, when we have the constitution, which we say we have it, the critical question is that are we living according to that constitution? Because we can have it as a paper, but to live according to what it says can be different. And why I'm saying it can be different in terms of are we following the rule of law, you know, as you know, the executive or parliament, or are we, you know, moving around or not following the rule of law? And then are we governing with ethics in it? And I think you have seen that the reports have come about the report of Incan report, in terms of if you have instituted a public protector to do an investigation, who is a lawyer, and which by constitution, she is there, or her office really, is there to do the work. And after they have done the work, and then they bring the report, if we follow the rule of law, we should respect her office and deal with that and not put it aside and then probably try to attack. Then when we do that, then the Constitution, which we believe in, then it means that we are not following it as we're supposed to be, because she is constitutionally being there, her office. So there should be a respect in terms of not even dealing with her report. And I think that becomes some of the spoilers of the good thing. I'll tell you that for 20 years, we had three presidents. We have President Mandela, we have President Mbeki, and then we have President Zuma. And then if we are moving in the Constitution, as I said, some of us were concerned that this is the Constitution. Structures are set, as the former speaker said. Now let's work the structures, because and nobody is above the law.
Yeah.
All of us, from the president to everybody, if there's a process which has been made, which my prayer is that I wish they could deal with this in Gata report before the elections. Put it to the parliament, because parliament is there. And let them deal that.
And that constitution says everybody is equal before
the law.
Yeah. And so we'll revisit that. But I want us to touch on another very important aspect of South African life. Mr. Butikale, you know, many, many South Africans over the decades lost statehood, lost their nationalities. And many people didn't realize this. How big is this an issue today, 20 years after the death of apartheid?
Thank you, Vincent. Dr. Fikeni was talking about some of the major achievements since the end of apartheid. As far as, and in addition to that, it's not a question of this is more important than the other, but the demise of apartheid has brought about the creation of a nation. What has happened was that in 1970, the apartheid regime at that time took an important decision, a law that deprived, in an arbitrary fashion, South Africans of their nationality. Four Bantustans had decided at that time to opt for independence, and as a result, millions of South Africans lost their South African nationality. Not only that, but there were also those who never did, those who did not come from the TBVC states, as they were called at that time, they were disenfranchised. In your introductory remarks, you were talking about elections that are going to take place on the 7th of May, a few days from now. South Africans have the ability to vote today. It wasn't the case until 1994. And what happened in 1994, with the adoption of the interim constitution, South Africans were able to reacquire their lost nationality. And that is of fundamental importance. Without that, you don't
But you're saying that there's still a number of them that haven't fully regained their citizenship in South Africa.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that there is a constitution with the Bill of Rights that comes and modernizes the system by introducing two ways of acquiring South African citizenship, by descent and by birth. So today, there is that safeguard that whoever qualifies in accordance with the Citizenship Act of South Africa is in the position to acquire South African nationality. What happened in 1994, as I stated, was that those who came like myself, I was from Bophuthatswana, and I lost arbitrarily my South African nationality between 1976 and 1986, where it became possible for those who had lost it to reacquire it, but through registration, an onerous way of doing it. But in 1994, we regained that possibility through a constitutional way, and a legislation was adopted. And today, South Africans are citizens, and they have the ability to vote.
That is something to be grateful about. You know, before we pause for a short break, we'd like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is on social networking website Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back, so please don't go away.
In 1948, the policy of apartheid is adopted when the National Party takes power. In 1951, the Bantu Homelands Act is passed, stripping millions of blacks of their South African citizenship and land. In 1952, now considered foreigners, black Africans need passports to enter white-controlled South Africa. In 1953, the Bantu Education Act requires that the white government supervise the education of all blacks. Non-whites cannot attend white universities. In 1960, 70 black demonstrators are killed in Sharpeville, and the African National Congress is banned. In 1961, the ANC's new military wing launches a sabotage campaign against the government.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa. Before we went to the break, we were talking to my guests about many South Africans who lost their statehood, their nationality during the era of apartheid. And I think I want to take this back to South Africa, to Dr. Fikeni, if you can hear me. Give us a sense of how things have been for many of those South Africans who, over the years, had to kind of rework their way back to South African nationality to regain what was lost over the years.
Well, I do think that it's a source of pride for many average South Africans that there has been an effort to build this oneness, recognizing the diversity, and also that it's no longer now confined to a particular section of the population. But again, things that bind people together can only be completed if the material conditions, employment, poverty, begin to be addressed in a manner that doesn't associate closely poverty with color. That is where South Africa is still struggling in terms of job creation, in terms of wealth creation. Ending poverty, because with inequality, poverty and unemployment being so high, those are the kinds of things which militate against this and common South African identity.
And you know, Dr. Fikeni, if I may interrupt you a little bit, South Africans over those years of apartheid kind of understood why they were poor, because they saw the fellow who was up there, who was leading their nation, did not look like them. For the last 20 years, they have watched their nation being led by men who look like them. But if you go to the streets of Soweto and other places, you find so many young people and even older people who feel that since those 20 years of black men being in power, some of them have continued in the same poverty while they see those in leadership growing richer and richer. What do you tell such people when they ask you why the situation is the way it is?
Well, it's a combination of two things. The legacy issues of colonialism and apartheid would not have been ended in 20 years because of the complexity and the deep structural issues that would make that not possible within a short space of time. But you also say that it's because of the poor policy choices in terms of the last 20 years and the failure to implement some of the good policies which are in place in order to begin to transform in a very meaningful way the society itself. So to that extent, you say to the person, history has a hand, but also current leadership has a hand in the conditions that we see. But of course, you also remember that the global economic and financial crisis has had an impact on South Africa because we are globalized now. Whatever has happened there has impacted on the South African economy as well.
Back in the studio, Dr. Reverend Malang Kobo. 20 years for some people, they will say, well, it's not a long time. The country was under apartheid for many, many years. But there are some who feel like that is some good time to have registered some progress. What is your personal thought on the timeline, 20 years?
I'm saying that 20 years, you know, if you have good leadership, and the Bible says where there's no vision, the people perish. If there is good leadership which pulls the people together to say, this is where we are, and then I believe that we will. I think at the moment, or in the last 20 years, and I really don't want to be negative, but just to be realistic in terms of 20 years, there are people who, even though we say there's improvement, on their daily living, they don't see it. And there are some people, unfortunately, they're saying they were better under apartheid, which that's the word I don't want to hear, but there are people who are saying that, and which means that what have we done in terms of 20 years? And there are good things which we have, and then there are still majority in terms of... The critical issue of dealing with poverty is that we really have to be serious about it in terms of what do we do with our economic structure? Because that's where the crux of the matter is. Are we able to challenge, transform our economic structure, or are we moving around it? Let's take, for example, the land issue, which has been a critical thing even under apartheid. How far have we gone with the land issue, which we know that when the people have the land, at least, and resources and all, something can. The land issue is still not all resolved, and then it's like a piece there. So there are some other people who feel on the ground, majority of them, of saying, you know, this has not worked. And there is another thing which people are saying, and really, we love non-racial thing. To some, non-racial is an ideal. And then it's where we are going. Mm-hmm. So when you have a legacy of majority, almost like 80% of the black people who were under apartheid, and then when you transform South Africa, you don't have an affirmative action, you know, of saying, what about those who have been left out? Let me concentrate on them while I'm doing that. And then you just say, you're not going to see them. You know, everybody has to go into that part. That, again, is another
people are saying.
There are a lot of things which
some have said that the reason for why the government has had a very difficult time is, for example, the lack of education among so many black people, which was a strategy of the apartheid system to deny black people education in South Africa. And therefore, there hasn't been enough time to educate enough people to kind of benefit from the economic development of South Africa.
I don't buy that. Mm-hmm. I'm telling why I'm saying that is not. We, Buti and I, we were the children of under apartheid. I was born a year after apartheid was there. The little education which we had, as I said, under apartheid, it helped us somehow. There was just, as I said, a certain system. We do have people who are educated and who could work too into South Africa. Unfortunately, there are some other sorts of saying that even when you want people to help you, sometimes we become partisan, and sometimes we have some other things which block people to do that. Mm-hmm. we were showing Mampila Rampila, who is a doctor and everything, education which she got. Most of our generation, even though it was, you know, a so-called inferior education, we valued it. And now, I mean to say, you're looking back in terms of the education system which is there, in terms of, you know, how is it coming? It's still little questions to be.
Mr. Kale, if we may touch back a little bit on the issue of those who were forced to be outside of the country and kind of lost their nation. You're one of them, and I think Reverend Doctor was also one of those. How has this group helped kind of bring some kind of new flavor, new dimension, perspective to the South African society at this point?
I think what's positive as well is that the international community had taken a very firm stand when it came to the issue of apartheid. And we're talking earlier on about people who had been arbitrarily deprived of their South African nationality. And in 1986, for example, in the US, Congress adopted sanctions in order to impose economic, financial sanctions on the regime at that time. So about approximately 40,000 South Africans are said to have been outside.
Let me interrupt you a bit. We want to kind of go to our callers. We have Tafo, who's calling us from Ghana. Tafo, I think. You're most welcome. Hello there.
Yeah, thank you very much, Vincent. Hello.
Yes, hello. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you.
Go ahead. Vincent.
Yes, go ahead.
Good evening.
Good evening to you.
Yes, Vincent, the fact that I want to congratulate the good people of the South Africa. And my other concern is that if you look at the South African people and talk about the ordinary people, the fact that we are celebrating their freedom for almost more than 20 years now, let's look at their living condition. I thought the leadership, instead of celebrating, they should look at the economic challenges that people are going through. Because the level of poverty in South Africa is not something we can be proud of. Concerning the size of the economy in South Africa, and you look at the poverty people are going through, I believe that the fact that they are celebrating, they should do something about the poverty before the people will rise against them. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jeff, for your call. What would be your response to that question, Dr. Fikeni? Are you with us? Dr. Fikeni in South Africa?
Yes.
Yes. The question from...
Hello?
Yes, I'll call her from Ghana. Did you get the question?
I got the question, but it was a bit faint for the most part on my side.
Yes, it was bemoaning the deplorable poverty in South Africa, and someone saying the leadership has failed to uplift the people of South Africa. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I would say the picture is a lot more complex than the more simplified version. Some do say that the leadership has failed. Some do say that the leadership has succeeded without stating the obvious problems. There are areas where there has been success. That you have 16 million people who are having a social security grant prevented them from falling through the cracks into the worst poverty. That you do have hundreds of thousands of houses that have been built and many other programs of that nature. If you make a comparative analysis, it's almost unprecedented in any post-independence country. And there are areas, obviously, of failure that the government has had some policies, some of which were good, but failing to implement. Corruption has become a problem as well. Those are the areas where one would say transforming the economy in a fundamental way, such that you do not have the concentration of wealth in the hands of the white minority or even the politically connected ones who have just now joined it, the black people,
those are the areas where I think the focus needs to be.
Okay, and we'll talk more about particularly the corruption that is being associated with the black leadership in South Africa. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We have more of our discussion in a moment, but first, here's Maria Mandiello.
Well, thanks, Vincent. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week. Patricia Namdi in Kampala, Uganda writes, "It was a blessing when the notorious apartheid regime ended. There was success when the late Nelson Mandela became South Africa's first black president. However, South Africans still have a long way to go. People are poor, unemployed, and there's a lack of proper housing, water, and other needs. Most whites are richer and better off than blacks are. Whites still control most of the businesses and land. President Jacob Zuma's government needs to raise the standard of living among black Africans."
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call us collect and we'll pay for the call. Or call direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, here's our social media reporter, Maria Mandiello. Maria.
Well, thanks, Vincent. On Sunday, South Africa will celebrate 20 years of freedom and democracy. The nation will commemorate the end of apartheid political system of racial segregation. Now, two decades later, the formal consolidation of the democratic institutions has nearly been accomplished, but serious economic and social challenges remain. South Africa has experienced an uneven pattern of economic growth with a rise in poverty. Other issues such as HIV and AIDS, the HIV and AIDS pandemic and land reform are fueling political and social divides at local and national levels. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, since the end of apartheid's political system in South Africa, has the nation made progress socially, politically, and economically for all of its citizens? Well, let's begin with a comment right away from Manan Kamla in Durban, South Africa, who writes, "I think the African National Congress has failed the majority of the South African people to favor the top members of the ANC. Well, another comment comes from Vienna Chanda from Lusaka in Zambia, and he says, "South Africa has made progress in certain areas. It was the largest economy in Africa until recently when Nigeria took over. Politically, their democracy is the best in Africa, as testified by the smooth transition of power starting with Nelson Mandela to Thabo Mbeki and now Jacob Zuma. I hope that trust with the president, Jacob Zuma, will do the same." Well, Vincent, it's a positive comment after all. They usually hit hard, but this time he feels that South Africa is on the right track. What do you think?
And, you know, all that is debatable because
the
good and bad things, the challenges, and those in leadership will tell you one thing. Those who are being led will say another. It all depends on their circumstances. Well, thank you very much, Marema. Now, do you have any more feedback to share with our audience?
Absolutely, indeed. We'll move on to a posting from Arsen Kuwayu from Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, who writes, "Well, South Africa succeeds economically because of good government and planning. It attracts many youth from East and West Africa searching for employment. However, socially, there is still a huge gap between rich and poor, white and black people." And finally, Al Hassan Abdallah of Accra in Ghana says, "Nothing has been done. Black presidents have been given a chance, and we have seen their results. South Africa should give a chance to a white president so we can judge between the apartheid time and now. Well, a legitimate point indeed, Brother Abdallah, but others would also say that whites have ruled for a long time and the ANC is only getting started. What do you make of this, Vincent?
That's rather interesting. How about one day when South Africa will have no color
absolutely,
as an issue? But how about we get the thought or two from our guest here in the studio. What do you think, Reverend Mahlangu Kobo? The recurring topic, the recurring thought is about poverty and mismanagement and corruption.
Yeah, and I'm saying that when there is corruption, we don't have to talk about it. We have to put action in it. And then when we are going to deal with poverty, I did hear what doctor was saying that, you know, they have social grants. And social grants are like a Band-Aid, first aid. People have to get jobs. They need job creation, a serious, serious job creation where people can work and not depend on the government. Because when you depend on the government, which doesn't have a tax base, South Africa, majority of people, if they're not working, there's no tax base for to you to get that. And then we have COSATU and some other, the unions. And that's the way which questions have been coming. What did they do or what are they doing to make sure that the workers, you know, are treated well? The laws, union laws, are very great in South Africa. However, where are the jobs? Mm-hmm. And then now we had issues like the mine workers, the mine workers, as in Marikan, they were just wanting a decent job. I mean, it's a decent wage. So how do we deal with that when people want a decent wage and then those who, in fact, have been union, say leaders who are on the other side of the thing can be sensitive about, let's do something about, we have to look at it, you know, from all aspects.
And anyway, briefly to Dr. Fikeni, I mean, for many, seeing the images of the police pursuing mine workers like we witnessed and people being shot and killed almost brought memories of the apartheid time. It was painful to watch. How does somebody take that in South Africa?
Well, of course, it came as a shock and a grave disappointment for many people because that reminds people of those moments of Sharpeville, of those moments when people were unarmed and protesting and seeking justice. So to that extent, it also brings another question that police seem to be so overstretched dealing with the political protests, which means that, as the fellow panelist was saying, there is a sense of urgency that South Africa has to deal with the issue of poverty, unemployment. At the very core of this is the economy that must be made to be very productive and be inclusive, which is not the case now on a large scale.
Mm-hmm. And now, Reverend, do you think that the is it a fair assessment that perhaps it's time now to try out a person of another race for president? Just in a word?
we've been having, since colonial time, we've been having all white race. I mean, say it's just an African liberation, which is 20 years ago. I mean, say 20 years ago, we can't just say we need to put somebody else or anything. The African National Congress have been tried. We've been part of it. And we have worked with it, and it's the organization which we do love. However, the thing is that when you love somebody, if somebody is not doing the right thing, you are not going to try to defend that person. And you are supposed to do, saying, this is the thing. ANC has to correct itself and has to be consistent in what they say.
So
when they removed Thabo Mbeki, they just did it, and as a good cater, he moved away. They removed Malema, the NEC was working. So as I said, be consistent in what you're doing, when you say you're doing. You are improving the organization, and you are not making people to run away from the organization.
Let's hope someone is listening to you down there in Pretoria. Well, Marema, thank you very much for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, talking about improvements of the organization, I'll be definitely interested in hearing a little more about what they think about a young person like Julius Malema that the Reverend just mentioned. Anyways, that's all the feedback we have for now. We appreciate all the responses. Please keep them coming. And before I go, just a reminder, we love hearing from you, so drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can simply join our YouTube channel. Just subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. Next week on Straight Talk Africa, the annual meeting of the World Economic Forum is being hosted by Nigeria next month. The nation is the new economic leader on the continent, surpassing South Africa. However, the country's stability is in question due to the rise in terrorist attacks by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. A discussion on Nigeria's future is next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. You're watching Straight Talk Africa live from Washington. And we want to go to Nigeria. We have Patrick on the line. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, Patrick, from Nigeria.
So, Vincent, and good evening, our guests. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening to you.
You see, if we look at, in terms of security-wise, in Africa for the past 20 years, personally, I would score them average. Average in the sense that if you compare the calamities within the African continent in terms of security, South Africa is better on. Now, you look at the politics issue in South Africa, you see that there is that issue of do or die. That is some of this, our African continent is not there. Now, my question to our guest tonight is this. Mm-hmm. Some weeks back, there was a report about South Africans and Nigerians that some Nigerians were accused they into drugs in South Africa. And there was sort of a pandemonium between South Africans and Nigerians. So how far have you solved that issue with Nigerians and South Africa? Thank you very much. Have a blessed day.
Well, thank you for your call. Dr. Fikeni, did you get our guest from Nigeria, Patrick?
I do think that the point that has to be made is that when we are looking at South Africa and look at some of the weaknesses and some of the strengths, one has to ask a question, compared to what? In terms of looking at other African countries post-independence during the same period. So to that extent, that then makes us realize that some progress has been made. That also makes us realize that some mistakes have been made and some failure of leadership on some issues has been the case. So that in itself, I think, is very, very important. But we should not confine ourselves to just what government has done. Remember, the sum total of the society includes the private sector playing its own role in this sense. Just like when we talk of corruption, it's not just what government corruption is, but also the billions worth of, corrupt activities in the private sector.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Kale, if I may come to you, in terms of, comparison, and the comparison has been mentioned, South Africa is not the only country where many people are forced to get out of the country and many people are forced to take up nationalities in other countries, but they have desired to go back. Would you say that South Africa is doing better than other nations in bringing back those of their own who left, who are forced to leave?
It's very difficult to compare, in a sense that you're talking here about, let's just talk about the African continent. You're talking about a crisis-ridden continent where you have a series of complex refugee emergency situations. But all in all, South Africa did excellently well. I was talking earlier on about approximately 40,000 people that had been forced to leave South Africa. And they found refuge in mainly neighboring countries, but also North America and Europe. And the vast majority of these people went back home because of the fundamental changes that were obtaining in South Africa at that time, the beginning of the 90s, throughout the 90s, and with the transformation that we experienced in 1994. So if you were to compare, for example, with those who left in 1991 after the fall of the Siad Barre regime in Somalia, they are still trapped, unfortunately, in the camps in Dadaab, where you have Dadaab, which has become pretty much the third largest city in Kenya, with refugees who were there, who are approximately 500,000.
Half a million.
So they have done exceptionally well. Very few today South Africans have been forcibly displaced, either inside the country or outside the country, and which is a huge tribute to the leaders of the country.
Well, thank you. A reminder that you tuned into Straight Talk Africa today. We are all commemorating the 20th anniversary of the end of apartheid and examining the status of the country since April 27, 1994, when people of all races were able to vote in the first democratic elections that elected Nelson Mandela as South Africa's first black president. To participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment.
In 1964, ANC's leader Nelson Mandela is sentenced to life in prison. In 1976, more than 600 are killed in clashes between black protesters and security forces during uprising, which starts in Soweto. In 1989, Frederick de Klerk replaces Pieter Botha as president and public facilities are desegregated. In 1990, Nelson Mandela is released after 27 years in prison. In 1991, de Klerk repeals remaining apartheid laws and international sanctions are lifted. And in April 1994, the ANC wins the first non-racial elections and Nelson Mandela becomes president.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies.
Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 1730 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook. Keywords, Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. If you've just joined us, we are today, we're commemorating the 20th anniversary of the end of apartheid and examining the status of the country since April 27, 1994, when people of all races were able to vote in the first democratic elections that elected Nelson Mandela as South Africa's first black president. Our distinguished guests are Buti Kale, Deputy Regional Representative of the Office of the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, or UNHCR, based here in the nation's capital, Reverend Dr. Mankeloho Mahlango Kobo, Associate Pastor of Shiloh Amy Church and founder of the Life Restoration Ministry based in Baltimore, Maryland. She also authored a book entitled Restore Me, 40 Healing Sermons that delivers a message of hope, love, and faith. And Dr. Samadoda Fikeni, the chairman of the Council of Walter Sisulu University, who is on the phone from Johannesburg, South Africa. And even my Amikama, rather, you actually is in Pretoria. I misrepresented that. Coming back to you, Dr. Fikeni, you know, we did mention Nelson Mandela, Madiba, just a few lines back. Many people are saying, wow, this is going to be so different. The first time since the end of apartheid that an election in South Africa is going to be held without Tata Nelson Mandela. How does it feel like in South Africa?
Well, it's different than any other time before, because even when Nelson Mandela had taken retirement from retirement and was no longer seen or participated in the public events, that he was still around and amongst us as a mortal being had its own impact. But again, his departure was in a way blessed by the fact that we were bombarded by media, by public figures who were throwing all these accolades but also reminding us where we come from and reminding us of a vintage leadership that Nelson Mandela and his cohort of leadership demonstrated. So to that extent, it raised the issue or the public debate of what was and what we've become, in a sense, and try to contradistinct that.
Yeah. What would you say about some who say, you know, even towards the end of his life, Nelson Mandela might have been a little disappointed with the performance of the ANC, the leadership in the ANC, and where the country was at that time, particularly because of the what is seen as rampant corruption and mismanagement?
Surely he warned about this when he left, you know, his position as the president of the ANC, that it became something which was being seen now, and leaders being accused of this or that kind of scandal might have come as something of a great disappointment to him, especially at the time when he was no longer capable of intervening in any serious manner.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Reverend Mahlango Kobo, in terms of you know, in terms of the effect, the impact that Nelson Mandela had, recently former President de Klerk was actually saying that many South Africans have stopped kind of pursuing or trying to live up to the ideals of Nelson Mandela. Do you feel that that is being lost within particularly the leadership of the ANC?
I think so. Mm-hmm. And it's because when you look into Tata's leadership, and I always, even when, you know, he passed away, the tribute which we did, he's an extraordinary leader in terms of, he is the first African president who was not, who didn't stay forever as a president. He could have, but he saw that my time is this, and this is the space I need to do, and the time I'm doing it, and pass the legacy to Thabo Mbeki and the others, the leadership. And then also, the other thing which we lost with President Mandela was sacrifice. He sacrificed his own personal gain, you know, by, he was a great lawyer. He could have stayed there. He didn't do that. And then he embraced the whole liberation struggle. He sacrificed his family. So sacrifice was at his corner. Mm-hmm. We don't see that now. Thirdly, he was not greedy in terms of, I need money for us. We don't hear anything of taxpayers' money was done for President Mandela or anything. And he was very humble also in terms of understanding that, yes, you put me on the pedestal, but this is a collective leadership. Mm-hmm. And as the doctor from the Sisulu Foundation saw, so there was that leadership, and then he had the leadership, which was, you know, just quickly, the leadership which was helping him to see what it is, and then we lost that.
Okay. Very quickly, you know, the South Africa is known for having coined the word Ubuntu, and so we expect everybody to love the brothers, especially from around the continent. But what do you make of the xenophobia that has been dogging the country for some time now? And why is that the case?
I wouldn't be able to tell you why it's the case. But what I can say, on the other hand, working for a refugee agency, is that South Africans were hosted by other African nations. And these African nations at that time were having their own struggles. They were having social difficulties, and they were also having political difficulties. And some were even attacked by the apartheid regime. And I am referring to Zimbabwe, Lesotho, Botswana, Mozambique, Angola, and the illegal occupation of Namibia at that time. It's not supposed to be the case. A negative, intolerant attitude towards others. And the Rev, who is a woman of God, knows that you remember that you were foreigners in other people's lands, and you're supposed to be receiving others. South Africa received hospitality and generosity from very struggling countries, and as a result, it's expected. I am not insinuating that it's not done. South Africa has got one of the best asylum laws in the continent, and those who are seeking asylum in South Africa from other nations do have the permit, the authorization to work while still seeking asylum. And these are some of the things that we see, that the government has taken steps, and South Africa happens to be, even in the midst of the difficulties we have been highlighting now, the single largest asylum-seeking host country in the continent, and it's among the top 10 countries that host asylum seekers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, in very few seconds, about a minute, Reverend, what do you think must be done by the South African leadership, but also all South Africans, to really achieve that dream of living in a perfect, or just the kind of nation you want South Africa to be?
South Africa should be exemplary. They should lead and implement what is in the Constitution, and then make sure that the men and women at the ground can see the fruits of the liberation. And the job creation, that's the main critical thing which they have to look, education, and also make sure that there is peace among every one of us. And leadership has to take, has to be accountable for what is happening and not be silent.
Thank you very much. Well, and on that note, we want to thank our guest, Buti Kale, Deputy Regional Representative of the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, or UNHCR, based right here in the nation's capital, Reverend Dr. Monke Koho Mahango Kobo, Associate Pastor of Shiloh AME Church and founder of the Life Restoration Ministry, based in the U.S. capital of Baltimore, Maryland. And last but not least, Dr. Samadoda Fikeni, the chairman of the Council of Walter Sisulu University, who joined us on the phone from Pretoria, South Africa. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Butty. Also, don't forget to tune in to Voice of America's Africa 54, a 30-minute daily TV magazine program that features what is trending in news, health, sports, and lifestyle. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. I'm Vincent McCorry, in for Shaka Sali. Good evening.